Our host needs no introduction.
His name is...
A name so simple it rolls right off your tongue.
His name is James... No, his name is... James Lawrence! Lawrence! Lawrence!
Try again.
Forrest Lone... Lars! Lars!
No! Chuck Jaffe.
Yes! 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 We're like this!
I'll say it again so you remember, okay? This is Money Life with Chuck Jaffe.
Wow! 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 All I can say is wow!
Please do not overdramatize these proceedings.
And now, here's Chuck.
He's one in a million.
He sure is.
Well, this is Money Life, and all I can say is wow, because we got a great show planned for you. It's Money Life for May the 12th. Thanks for joining me. Let me tell you what we've got on tap today. We start, as we do every Thursday, with the ETF of the week. After which, David Payne, staff economist for the Kiplinger Letter, will be here. Then, Matthias Kuhlme and Matt Harris from Hightower Advisors, here for collective wisdom from Hightower's Global Investment Solutions. Normally, they're here on Wednesday. This week, they're here on Thursday. Next week, they'll be here on Thursday as well. And then our Money Life market call is Martin LeClaire. He is Chief Investment Officer at Barrick Yard Advisors. So that is the basic lineup. Now, first, I want to apologize to anybody who got some goofiness in with yesterday's show. And by goofiness, I don't mean sort of the usual crazy stuff that we might do here. Or what have you. No, I'm not talking about that kind of weirdness.
Weird stuff!
No, like, yeah, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the fact that when our show first went up yesterday, it basically had our interview with Mag Black Scott twice.
That was weird.
Yeah, that actually is weird. It was a glitch. And thankfully, a couple of you guys told us. So we took the show down. Many of you find it on iTunes. We took it off of iTunes to replace it and fix it. At which point we put the show back up. And for some reason, you guys couldn't then hear it. Like it didn't show back up on iTunes.
Come on, Buckethead!
Well, I know that Rob Floyd and Bob Robertson were both very involved and that they hated that this happened, and so do I.
No crooked cucumbers.
But a couple of things. One, we were alerted to the fact that things weren't going right again on iTunes. It looked apparently to us like everything was okay. And then it quickly wasn't. And as we were literally trying to get it fixed, well, you guys were writing us. So we really appreciate that. I know it sounds weird, but it's one of these things. It happens to me every now and again, like when I write a column, right? I will write a column and I read it again and again and again, and I make some little tweak or I do something and I suddenly insert a typo. And then I don't see it and I send it off to an editor. And my editor fixes it and drops me a note and goes, you know, by the way, I never find typos. You know, I'm a champion speller. So it's like, there are never any spelling errors, but you spelled the word the wrong or something. You know, were you trying to say something else? These words were together. Does this mean something? Or there's some extraneous whatever where I was cutting something. Those kinds of things happen. And occasionally you're rushing to get stuff done. And for all of us, this is something we do outside of our day jobs. So I definitely appreciate that when you see something that is out of place, you get in touch with us. Seriously, we're never happy to have these problems.
Ah, damn it!
But we are happy to try to fix them, and that's what we did. Now, that said, we are on high alert today, particularly with iTunes. That's why I'm giving you this warning. Why? Because we had one other day where we had a problem similar to this, and it wound up like knocking us off of iTunes for weeks where we were having issues and we couldn't get things squared away. So we don't want to have that problem again. We are on other formats and other platforms, places like Stitcher and what have you. So you should be able to find us. You may have to look elsewhere. But if you can't find us on your normal platform for the next couple of days, I definitely want to hear from you. So Chuck at MoneyLifeShow.com. Just drop us in and go, hey, you're not here. I thought you were supposed to be here. Okay, we're on high alert for the next couple of days as a result. Now, we're going to have great shows, and that's why you're going to want to tune in. Money Life is independent personal finance talk. We are dedicated to looking smartly at a wide range of approaches and opinions on investing. It's not just what I like or believe in here. It is what I think you can benefit from hearing. Now, that said, when you go for different approaches and opinions, you shouldn't be surprised when there's disagreement, because after all, disagreement makes a market, right? If everybody thought a stock was going the same way, well, they wouldn't come to agreement on a price until somebody disagreed, right? If we all thought this $10 stock is going to $100, we'd go, well, we're just going to stay here. I'll pay you $12 for it. No, it's going to $100. You can't pay me $12 for it. You got to pay me something else. Only when we get to that spot where I go, you know, I'd be better off doing something else. We're close enough to $100 that I'm willing to take my profits and you still want to get it. Okay, that's when we disagree. That's okay, but you have to be aware of it. I've told you how to write me. We'd love for you to get more involved in the show on Twitter at Money Life Show, at MKTW Jaffe if you want to learn about my columns on MarketWatch. And the more involved you are, the happier we're going to be. We've got great guests coming for the next couple of weeks. We always expect to have great guests. And so I hope you will plan to be here. And I will tell you more about those guests at the end of today's show. So make sure you stay through the market call. That's always where we review picks and do some other stuff as well. So it's always a good thing to stay till the bitter end, even if you don't stay for the coup de grace, the last little sounder that we put in. All right. It's Money Life for May the 12th. Again, thank you for joining me. We start today with Tom Lydon. Then we go to David Payne from Kiplinger. Then Matthias Kuhlme and the gang from Hightower Advisors, followed by Martin LeClaire for the Money Life Market Call. The ETF of the week kicks things off when we come back right after this message.
Looking for alternative ETF strategies? Direction provides separate and distinct audiences with flexible investment tools to manage risk and execute short-term strategies. For more information, go to directionshares.com.
Well, I don't favor talking to vermin, but I'll talk to you just this once.
Exchange-traded funds are the investment world's new frontier.
You better listen.
But with so many choices and styles, the ETF world is a bit like the Wild Wild West, filled with new issues and ideas, but fraught with the same old dangers of investing.
If you're looking for trouble, I'll accommodate you.
Every Thursday, Tom Lydon of ETF Trends comes to Money Life to tell us about one ETF that is wearing the white hat right now.
Take it easy. We are the good guys.
He'll point out the good, the bad, and the ugly as he tells you which investment is worth taking a shot on.
That's good shooting.
And names his ETF of the week.
Now, Wild West.
That's right. Tom Lydon is here, as he is every Thursday at this point in the show, to bring us the ETF of the week. Tom is the editor at ETFtrends.com, a site that is a full-service site for everything you could want to know about ETFs. And it's not just, well, here's what's starting, here's what's going on, here's the news in the ETF industry. It's also, what does Tom like? What is he looking at as the kind of thing that would be an ETF of the week? And how does it all work? You can go to the website. You can follow them on Twitter at ETF Trends. Tom is on Twitter. He is at Tom Lydon. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chuck. It's great to be back.
Our ETF of the week is...
the Reality Shares DivCon Leaders Dividend ETF, ticker symbol LEAD.
LEAD, the Reality Shares DivCon Leaders Dividend ETF. This is based on the DivCon Leaders Dividend Index. You'll have to explain a little bit what that is, because I was about to say, well, this is your basic smart beta fund, but there is no such thing as a basic smart beta fund. In fact, basic and smart beta would sort of be an oxymoron. So explain, so that I don't make a moron of myself, what it is we're talking about, why this fund is different, and what makes it the ETF of the week now.
Yeah, it's a new fund launched this year, But if you go back and you look and see what some of the best performing funds are of the last 1-3 year period, they're large cap, they're dividend oriented, and those that actually have continued increasing dividends come to the top of the list. So I was in the offices of Reality Shares in San Diego last week. We've been monitoring the development of their ETF suite, which is quite innovative. This is one of their new launches, which is specific to not just dividend growers, but dividend leaders. They actually have a specific research tool that they use to look at every company on the S&P 500, and it gives them a DivCon score as far as what's going to happen in the future regarding their current dividend based on their current financial structure and the way things look forward. So with that in mind, this Smart Beta Index is really produced to bring forward those constituents or those companies that not only have decent dividends, but predicting the future dividend growth of stocks within the S&P 500. Again, Smart Beta, just getting smarter. So in this world where we're looking at the Fed eventually continue to hike interest rates, the threat of what that might do to the bond market, and the fact that there are a lot of companies that are very, very comfortable, and although they're enjoying very steady growth, they're also sharing the success with their shareholders by kicking off regular dividends. Great story. It really has been a great story in the last few years, and if this is something that resonates with you, this is an ETF that you might consider.
Would you consider it as a replacement for something you already own? Because on the one hand, it's a very compelling story, and on the other hand, people in many cases already have gone after dividend leaders types of funds.
Yeah, I think, Chuck, what's happening is for decades, we were very, very comfortable with legacy indexes like the S&P 500. But today, being able to have, you know, not only great analysis of the underlying securities or the underlying companies, but also being able to put some type of investment objective of a traditional index like dividends and call out those companies that maybe don't produce dividends or maybe their financials are looking a little bit weaker, or the idea that some may actually look stronger than they did last quarter and the prospects of them increasing their dividends might be better. Again, you're never going to get it right. Things always happen in the marketplace. But when you look at kind of the cross-section of companies, you still get in this index a nice cross-section of sector weights. You get a nice cross-section of top holdings, and not having any company really represent a huge amount of the underlying index, which is fantastic. And they're, you know, really pillars in the business, both in, you know, the financial side and industrials and technology and healthcare. So the question is, can the S&P 500 that served the average investor for many, many years, can it be better? And I think with Smart Beta today, we're proving that. And in this case, we're proving that we can actually have not only decent growth, but actually get a decent yield as well. So the dividend leaders here offers a current yield of 1.79%. Not bad in today's rate environment.
Nope.
So that's something to consider. And also there's some stability because dividend leaders in the last 3 years have actually shown to offer not only better performance, but less volatility, because volatility is something resonating with people as they're concerned about what's going to be happening in the marketplace as the months go by.
This is not a fund that has 200 days of history to have a 200-day moving average. Is there a trading point on this? Is it the 50-day moving average? Is it wait to see what happens when it gets to 200 days? Or is this a long-term play and you're not going to worry about the moving average?
Yeah, it's a long-term play. I would look at the correlation you have in your portfolio compared to the S&P 500. It's very easy to do that. Whatever you have that's correlated with the S&P 500, peel off 10% of that and put it into this fund, and number one, you're going to get a better yield, and you may get better performance over time.
There you have it. Not the kind of trend play. This is core for 10% of your S&P 500 correlated money. It's the Reality Shares DivCon Leaders Dividend ETF, ticker symbol LEAD, the ETF of the week from Tom Lydon. Tom, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Chuck.
Tom is the editor of ETFTrends.com. Go there for more information. Don't forget to follow him on Twitter at ETF Trends and at Tom Lydon. Well, that was a great way to start our Thursday, May the 12th edition of Money Life. But that means we've got plenty more to go. The big interview is next when Money Life comes back right after this message.
Hightower is a groundbreaking team of financial advisors committed to giving you access to best-in-class financial products and services, a practice often overlooked by brokers on Wall Street. Visit HightowerAdvisors.com to learn more about the Hightower difference.
Many of you are surely wondering why I have summoned you at this hour.
It's time for the big interview!
All right, boys, prepare to be dazzled.
That's right, it's big. It's the big names, the big news, the biggest stories. It's the next big thing. What's the big deal? It's the big interview.
What's going on here? This is big news. We need coverage of this.
Money Life brings you the big thinkers, the top experts, the brightest minds. With the big interview, you can stay informed about all the financial matters that are important to you, all in one big package.
Oh, boy, I've never got a package this big. I've always wanted to have a huge package.
Did my taxes pay for this?
The big interview. Sit down, strap yourself in, and get ready to learn.
Your mind is beginning to work. It's entirely due to my influence, of course. You mustn't take any credit.
Well, today we're going to try to make your mind work around what is happening with the U.S. economy. Because I recently got a chance to take a look at an economic forecast that was a little bit different from a lot of what we've heard on the show. The forecast is the 2016 economy forecast by the Kiplinger Letter. And when I took a look, I was like, you know, this is taking a different approach than a lot of people we've heard from. So David Payne, staff economist for Kiplinger, joins us now. We're going to discuss it with him. First, if you want to go find out information about Kiplinger and more about what they do, go to Kiplinger.com. They are on Twitter, at Kiplinger. David Payne, welcome to Money Life.
Thank you, Chuck.
What I've been hearing from everybody else is that growth is generally slow and slowing, and it's going to stay there. What I read in your letter was that, no, there really wasn't any growth to speak of during the first quarter of the year, but that now we're going to actually see growth pick up, and we're going to have relatively robust growth going forward. Or did I miss something when I was looking at that?
No, that's correct. Now, everybody knows that the first quarter was very slow at about 0.5%. And the second quarter will be okay, roughly between 1.5% to 2%. But we expect that the third and the fourth quarters will be better.
Let's define better. I mean, are we actually going to be at a spot where we're looking at not just accelerating growth, but something that people consider healthy?
I think it'll be roughly 3% for the second half of the year. Now, a lot of that depends on how fast the consumer gets back into the game. One of the reasons that I'm optimistic is because there's a lot of income and money to be spent out there. And it's, you know, and so far it's sitting in consumers' pockets. We've had a strong increase in the number of jobs being added every month for a while. Disposable income is up 4%. We've got an increased use of credit cards by consumers, and we've had a return of the stock market to nearly the levels that it was at last year. And so all of these things should be creating the income and wealth that people have that they need to buy.
And yet, we have seen a pattern. Over the last couple of years, let's be perfectly honest, the first quarter of the last 3 years now has, to put it bluntly, sucked. From a growth perspective,
right.
There's been no good growth to speak of in the first quarter, 2014, 2015, now 2016. So when you look at an expansion and a consumer getting back into it, is it sustainable or does it set up okay, we can have some good economic growth. We can finish with a strong holiday season. And then we're going to get into January of next year, get back into the first quarter, and it's going to suck again.
Well, I understand your concern. And there is volatility in the quarterly numbers. It has been somewhat coincidental that the first quarter has been poor for the last 3 years. Previously, you know, part of that is because of different weather patterns these last 3 years. But looking at it over the entire year, I'm not saying that there aren't certain headwinds. Okay, that's one of the reasons why growth for the year as a whole is going to only be around 2%. Things should be improving the second half of 2016 and into 2017, but there are still headwinds that the U.S. economy is going through. We still have low energy prices, which benefits consumers, of course, but it has been hard for the areas of the country that are producing oil and the businesses that are selling to the oil companies. International growth is still going to be slow, and that is going to be hard for manufacturers of exports in this country, and that is going to continue to be a problem for the rest of the year. But despite these things, there is a lot of income being generated, you know, people getting jobs, and housing is starting to pick up. And so all of those things are going to push the economy forward. Now, not at a fantastic rate. I mean, you know, for 2017, you know, we're looking at growth, you know, somewhere between 2.5% and 3%. But it's going to be better than it is right now.
That being the case, if we see this kind of economic improvement, does that mean that ultimately we see a Fed that feels comfortable being data dependent and actually going through, and as we get down the stretch this year, they come back and raise rates and can do it without reining the game on the economy?
The Fed would really like to raise rates, but they are going to be cautious. They want to raise rates because they want to get the short-term interest rate up to around 3%, which is what they feel is sort of a normal rate that gives them enough leeway to then, you know, lower the rate when the next recession happens. But the Federal Reserve has shown, and Janet Yellen in particular, has shown that they are going to be cautious. They are not going to move too quickly. And as a result, I'm only expecting maybe one rate increase the rest of this year, possibly either July or December. One of the reasons I don't think they're going to raise at their September or November meetings is because those have occurred during the presidential campaign, and the Fed does not want to become a political football. So I'm fairly confident that they're not going to do anything at those two meetings. But yes, the Fed is looking for better growth so that they can start raising the interest rate. So probably they're going to raise more often in 2017.
When you talk about the Fed not wanting to be a political football, well, of course, politics is its own game. How much does that have the potential to change things? Because we're certainly looking at an election unlike anything anybody expected, say, a year ago.
That's true. I mean, Donald Trump did mention the possibility of replacing Janet Yellen. If he is elected, I would sort of anticipate that he would change his mind about that, because presidents have shown a reluctance to kind of change horses in the middle of the stream.
Yeah, of course, Trump has shown a reluctance to change his mind. Just saying.
And, well, that could be, yeah, there's going to be a lot of discussion about what Donald Trump might do or won't do. And I'm not any more expert than anyone else on that matter. But the Fed cherishes its independence, and so they will pay attention to what's going on politically. But they are they're more afraid of acting too quickly so that they might have to then rescind a rate increase later. And so they're waiting for the economy to really strengthen. You know, anything could happen in politics, but I don't think that the Congress or the president is going to basically, you know, come in and kind of take over monetary policy.
If we see the kind of growth you're expecting, do we wind up in a situation where the market has seen the worst of what it can expect to see with the lousy start it got off to at the beginning of the year? Or, you know, hey, we've got new growth, and oh, by the way, maybe an increase in interest rates, so we'll see the market take a little breather and readjust itself at some point.
Even though the economy should be on an uptrend, and generally that means that the market will be on an uptrend as well. But I have to caution you that the market will also respond, you know, with sharp drops at various times because of certain unexpected news coming from overseas. So if something happens with regards to, let's say, the British vote on whether to leave the European Union or not in June, you know, that could have a downward effect on the market. If Greece has a problem in paying back its bills, then that could potentially rattle the markets. China is a black box, and so there's always the possibility of something, you know, some news coming out of China. So for those reasons, there could be, you know, market volatility, but it seems to me that the market does tend to return to where the trend of the economy is going over the long run.
Well, we'll be interested to see how it plays out. David, I hope we get a chance to chat with you further on in the year, see if things are progressing as expected and what we might see again for the future. Thanks for joining me on the show.
Oh, you're welcome, Chuck. Thank you.
David Payne is the staff economist for the Kiplinger Letter. If you want more information, go to Kiplinger.com. They're on Twitter, at Kiplinger. Up next, collective wisdom from Hightower's Global Investment Solutions. And then the Money Life Market Call with Martin LeClaire from Barrett Yard Advisors. Stay tuned.
Customize an investment portfolio with FlexShares, ETFs designed to pursue targeted goals and to adapt to changing market conditions with both equity and fixed income solutions. For more information, go to FlexShares.com.
When it comes to investing and managing money, there is no one right way.
Of course, people do go both ways.
Ultimately, you and your advisors will make shared decisions to determine the path you take.
It appears we share the same passions.
Welcome to Collective Wisdom from Hightower's Global Investment Solutions, where Hightower advisors look at key situations facing you and help you see how discussion and analysis can lead to ideal decisions. Yes, it's time to get smart and put our heads together. Oh! And make the best decision for your situation.
Welcome to Collective Wisdom from Hightower's Global Investment Solutions. This a unique segment on Money Life because it's the one place where you get point counterpoint, and it's not just me talking to a guest because we have multiple guests on. And what makes that doubly unique is that the guests all come from Hightower. But they're not necessarily saying, oh, well, this is the house view, because Hightower doesn't force a mandatory house view on the people it works with. Instead, it works with experienced advisors, brings them into the fold, helps them benefit from working together and bouncing ideas off each other, but also allows them to come to their own conclusions. If you want to learn more about how it works, go to HightowerAdvisors.com. They're on Twitter at Hightower, A-D-V-S-O-R. Hightower is a sponsor of the show. Joining me now is Matthias Kuhlmeier, Managing Director and Partner at Hightower, Head of Global Investment Solutions, and Matt Harris, Head of Analytics and Research at Hightower. Both of them very active on Twitter. Matthias is at MoneyClipBlog, and that will lead you to some of his blog posts. So if you like what you hear on the show and you want to get more, that's a great way to do it. And Matt is at MattHarrisCMT. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program. Matthias, we are jumping into what I know is a subject you like a lot. And it's actually a subject that I think is very important because it's easy to be complacent when it comes to numbers. And right now, we're still always hearing the Fed say, oh, we're going to be data dependent and we'll look at the strength of the economy and we'll make decisions. But there's a lot of information out there, and Hightower has done some really good research into what goes behind the numbers. There's a lot of data out there that is a bit confusing. So is the official data, especially when it comes to inflation, and inflation can be looked at in many ways, is official data what people in your mind should still be using as they form their expectations? And if so, how do they then price that in? Or maybe they don't need to, because maybe the market's already priced for it, for what you expect for inflation going forward?
Well, Chuck, the answer is maybe. It really is the question, what do you want to get out of it, really? What is your objective? And what we like to do, we like to take the numbers and translate them into lines and graphs. It's kind of the work we have done, and we had talked about this on previous segments, our chart series, to basically looking at the world explained in lines and graphs. So speaking of inflation, as you know, we have been a very vocal critic of the way official inflation data is being computed and, or more importantly, I think, being used to drive investment decisions or overall policy. And in fact, we have discussed in previous segments, Chuck, and shown through the work that I had just referenced, that inflation is very significantly understated. So let me give you an example. I've been following work by economist John Williams. He has created what is known as shadow statistics, or short shadow stats. And based on his work, current inflation is understated by nearly 9 percentage points. That's a very significant number, but also very much in line with our own findings. Williams has actually found that this is the result of a constant reconfiguring of the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, that has occurred since the early 80s. So think about it. This is basically going back, quote-unquote, messing with the data and coming to outcomes that are potentially desired by policymakers for very different reasons. You know, many of social benefits are tied to CPI and so on and so forth. So I'm not saying there's big conspiracy here, but have a grain of salt when looking at the numbers.
Well, let's turn this over to Matt. Matt, I pointed out that in your Twitter handle, you're at Matt Harris CMT, the CMT standing for market technician. I'm curious, especially how you look at the official data, because when you start to throw official data out, well, you got to have something else to base the technicals on. So I'm curious how you treat it and what you see is happening and what measures you might rely on.
Sure, Chuck. We've been looking at another alternative measure over recent weeks and months called the Chapwood Index, which is another index attempting to provide a more appropriate measure of inflation. This index is comprised of the top 500 items that Americans spend money on. But what's really unique about this index is they do this on a city-by-city basis. And I think this is really important because inflation can be a local phenomenon, and a few quick examples will really tell that story. When you think about New York City, which has a heavy reliance on finance for employment, in 2009, banks were still laying off many employees, so you would imagine there was a deflationary environment in New York City. We can take a opposite extreme right now where tech and Silicon Valley are still as strong as ever, and so you would expect that with population growth in the Bay Area, housing prices and so forth, they're seeing a much higher rate of inflation than many other parts of the country. So you get a little bit of a localized number in the Chapwood Index. So what we did was average the city-by-city inflation rate from the Chapwood Index on a year-by-year basis, going back to the start of the index in 2011. We started comparing these versus CPI and came to a very similar conclusion to what Matthias had alluded to, but in a different methodology, which gave us a little bit more validity in the statement. What was interesting is in 2011, when the index started, CPI was at 3% year over year, where the Chapwood Index was at 9.89%. In 2013, when CPI had declined 50% and was at 1.5%, the Chapwood Index was actually up over 10%, so showing the large variance between these two measures. And as late as 2015, CPI had declined even further to 0.7%, and the Chapwood Index was still at over 9.5%. So the average variance is about 8.5%, which is really substantial when you think about losing purchasing power of 8% every single year. That's really dramatic.
I'm curious, because you've both come out with a number that suggests inflation closer to 9%. So, Matthias, when you're looking at inflation that is that high, and you've got consumers or clients who are looking at numbers and buying what they're getting out of CPI, how do you change their minds, and what are you investing in to deal with that kind of inflation?
Well, Chuck, let me come from a different angle. I actually think consumers are far more aware and are distrusting the official numbers, and this is exactly the reason why we have not seen the big consuming binge that everyone had expected when oil came down all the way to, you know, nearly the 20 and 30 levels. You know, we had actually talked about this on this segment, that it would unleash the spending power. It doesn't, because there are other elements that are creeping up in price that are not measured, for example, healthcare, education, and so on. How do you invest in it? I think we will hopefully have time to dedicate a whole segment to it. You need to change your framework, and certain things are actually the beneficiary of this increased monetary stimulus that we have seen over the years. So I'm saying inflation is actually showing up in certain asset markets, and the equity market has been one of the main beneficiaries. So I give you very complex answers. Consumers are actually getting the message. They are becoming more reasonable. They're spending less. And the equity market likely is the beneficiary, which also then, you know, poses a big risk. But hope we have time to explore this further.
Indeed, we will explore it further next week. We'll have the two of you back to carry this to the next level. But meanwhile, I appreciate you being here talking about it on Money Life this week. This has been Collective Wisdom from Hightower's Global Investment Solutions. My guests have been Matthias Coolmay, Managing Director and Partner at Hightower, Head of Global Investment Solutions, and Matt Harris, Head of Analytics and Research at Hightower. For more on the Hightower difference, go to HightowerAdvisors.com, on Twitter at HightowerADVSOR. Matthias is on Twitter, he's at MoneyClipBlog, and Matt Harris is at MattHarrisCMT. The Money Life Market Call is next, so stay tuned. We'll be right back with more.
Independent and advisor-owned, Hightower ensures that best-in-class financial product and service providers compete for your business every day, a groundbreaking model that's making waves on Wall Street. Discover what Hightower can do for you at HightowerAdvisors.com.
The problem with most financial shows when it comes to calling the market is that it's one guy's opinion over and over again.
Sell, sell, sell!
But any veteran investor knows that there are two sides to every trade, a buyer for every seller, and vice versa.
Buy, buy, buy!
That's why Money Life brings you a wide range of experts.
I need people who, you know, can work well under pressure.
Each day you get the benefit of a new set of eyes on the market with different methods and decision-making tools. Every day you'll hear a different expert giving their take on the market, on what looks good, what looks bad, and how they feel about some of your stock selections.
This stock is blowing up right now.
You never know who might show up to talk stocks. It may be a famous money manager or someone you've never heard of before.
No!
But you'll always get their straight talk.
Must you always be so blasted honest?
Their straight talk, that is, about what they see happening on the market and where to think about putting your money on the daily Money Life Market Call.
It's Money Life Market Call time, and we're joined right now by Martin LeClaire, Chief Investment Officer and Portfolio Manager at Barrick Yard Advisors. If you want more information, BarrickYard.com, on Twitter, at Barrick Yard. Martin LeClaire, welcome back to Money Life.
Thanks, Chuck. It's great to be here.
Always great to have you on the show, because I love the way you sort of explain the process and how you develop your courage to say, this is what I like and this is what I dislike. And it's also always interesting to get your take on the market. But before we get into that, my audience does need to get a refresher on what it is that you do, how you decide these are my buys and sells. So let's start there before we move on to what you see happening now.
Sure. So to step back, first of all, we're an investment firm, and being an investment firm, we like to remind people of what an investment is. And we believe an investment is any asset that generates cash for the benefit of the owner. An asset that does not produce cash, for example, art, precious metals, raw land, is a speculation. Businesses that generate negative cash flow are also speculative. For example, there are any number of businesses out there that are not producing net cash. And these are businesses that are constantly in the capital markets looking for either equity financing, in other words, they issue more stock, or they're looking for debt financing, in other words, they're issuing more bonds. These are companies, there are many of them out there, and those are the ones we stay away from. We need cash. That means we want companies which are consistently profitable and which are generating cash that can be used for the benefit of the owner. And essentially, the reason why we demand that is because if you have an investment, it's generating cash, then there's not that many things they can do with that cash. The owners of the business, the shareholders, have a claim on that cash. So that cash can be paid out to the owners in the form of a dividend. It can also be used to reduce the share count, and that makes sense if they're buying back the stock at an attractive level. It does not make sense if they're buying back the stock at inflated prices, as so many companies are doing today. Also, they can use that cash to reinvest in the business. And that's how, over the long term, you can make money in the stock market by owning these businesses, which are not only paying you a competitive dividend that you can then reinvest in either more shares of that company or other investments, but also they're reinvesting that cash flow for future growth. And that compounding effect is really how you make money in the stock market over the long term. So we are, by definition, given what I just said, long-term investors. Now, there are two types of investments. We call them cash return investments, mm-hmm. where most of that cash flow is paid out in the form of a dividend. And then there are other kinds of companies that maybe you own shares in, I don't know, Johnson & Johnson, of which part of it's paid out in the form of a dividend, part of it's used to buy back stock, and the remainder is used to reinvest in the business. And so when we're looking at our investment process, one of the critical things is, apart from, you know, show us the cash, is that element, how they've done at reinvesting that cash flow is a very critical element, because corporate America is replete with companies which have reinvested in shareholders' cash and not done it effectively. So return on invested capital is an important metric that we look at in our investment process.
Is it all bottoms up for you, or where does current market news and market headlines take any effect?
Well, the big picture is very important, because you don't want to swim against the tide of history. So we are very mindful of the headwinds that are out there. And, you know, this is not a political statement, but the fact is that we're in this low growth period because we built up this debt bubble that started in 1980 when Jimmy Carter left office in early 1981. National debt as a percentage of national income was somewhere around 43-44%. Now it's nearly 100%. And companies and individuals have also ballooned their debt as a percentage of income in real terms. So what the financial crisis was partly the system having a heart attack because there's too much debt. And so this debt serves as an overhang. You know, if you're driving your car right now and you're listening to this program, it's just common sense. If you have too much credit card debt and you're serious about getting your financial life in order, it means you're going to spend less money. And so that's what's happening throughout the economy. And that's definitely a macro headwind that we're very, very mindful of. So we believe that the world economy and the U.S. economy will be slower going forward than what we came to expect in the post-World War II boom. The only thing that can really pick things up is if we have an infrastructure spending boom, and it just doesn't seem to be the political will out there to do that. So we are mindful of the big picture, but ultimately what I just said to you was speculation. Who knows what the future will bring? There may be innovation that will come and be very disruptive and will decimate certain industries, for example, blockchain. There are estimates that technology is going to, just in the banking industry alone over the next 10 years, is going to eliminate 2 million jobs. But there might be things out there that's coming that we don't see that will create jobs. So Benjamin Graham, who is Warren Buffett's teacher and someone that, you know, I've read through my whole life and go back to, he said basically with the financial markets, you can approach it one of two ways, by way of speculation, and I would say that most people approach the markets by way of speculation, or by way of protection. That's why the micro is so important, is because, sure, we may have a world view, but we want the added protection of our investment process so that if we're wrong about the big picture, we're not going to get hurt if we're patient.
Let's talk about a name or two that makes it through the process. Give folks an example of what works for you.
So we kind of
classify total return stocks as falling into one of three types of categories. We call, first of all, skin in the game, double discounts. And these are holding companies. And a holding company is a business that owns other businesses. And skin in the game means there's heavy insider ownership. And I just ask people, it's just common sense to us, and the academic studies prove that over the long term, an owner of something treats that asset better than a renter. In the same way, if a company has heavy insider ownership, that's a very much of a positive for us. The double discounts comes with there are these businesses that own other businesses which are selling at discounts to really the intrinsic value of the underlying businesses. For example, in Asia, there's a nearly 200-year-old company called Jardine Matheson Group, and they own everything from Mandarin Oriental Hotel Chain, one of the premier hotel chains in the world. It's also a real estate development company. They own the largest Mercedes and BMW dealership in China. They own the largest food company in Indonesia. They own the 7-Eleven franchise in Asia outside of Japan. They've been in business since the 1840s. The Kizik family owns a lion's share of the stock. And since old man Kizik, who's still running the company, has been in charge since 1968, they've compounded their earnings and their dividends at a double-digit rate. So that, to us, that's Jardine Matheson Group is a very attractive long-term hold. In Europe, there's a holding company which is half controlled by the Frères, who are one of the richest families in Belgium. And then in Canada, the Desmarais family. It's a holding company based in Brussels. It's called Group Brussels GBL. Symbol is GBLBF. And they own blue chip European companies, for example, SGS, which is one of the premier companies in the testing and inspection business based in Switzerland. They own a chunk of Pernod Ricard, which is one of the largest drinks companies in the world. They produce liquor, Absolut vodka, stuff like that. So they have a very diversified portfolio, and they're selling at around a 35% discount to the sum of the parts value of the publicly traded holdings. Plus, in addition to that, they have private equity firms. In the U.S.
Well, I'm going to stop you here. I'd love to hear about it. But the truth is, if I do, we're not going to have time for hold it or fold it. So we're going to move on
okay,
and we'll get to hold it or fold it.
Okay.
Play hold it.
You got to know when to hold it.
Or fold it.
Know when to fold it.
Yeah, we're late getting to hold it or fold it, but that's because we've been having so much fun with Marty LeClaire. Martin LeClaire is Chief Investment Officer, Portfolio Manager for Barrick Yard Advisors. If you want more information, barrickyard.com, on Twitter, at Barrick Yard. You know how hold it or fold it works, so we're going to jump right in, and we're going to start with two requests we got from Josh in Petaluma, California. Josh, it's been a while since we've heard from you. The first, KKR and Company, ticker symbol KKR.
So KKR is a private equity firm, one of the best of the breed. There are three ways that they make money. One way they make money is they're like a traditional asset management firm like a Vanguard or a Fidelity, and they charge a management fee for the money that they manage. But in addition to that, they invest their own capital in the deals, these private equity deals that they do. And that's a way, once the deals, if the deals make money, then they get a percentage of those profits. And then thirdly, they get what's called a carried interest, which is basically an incentive fee, so that if the deal is successful, then they make additional fees as well. The results are going to be extremely lumpy, but if you are a long-term holder, I mean something like, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years, then I think this is a buy. I think it's a very attractive entry level. I don't own KKR, but I own Carlyle Group, which is also a private equity firm. These have only been publicly traded for only several years now, so they're not completely well understood, and they pay huge dividends. Most of their earnings they pay out in the form of a dividend, and that's going to be very lumpy. But if you have a 5 or 10 year time horizon, I think it's a very good quality investment.
Just go slow and be smart.
There you go. A qualified buy on KKR and Company, KKR. Josh's other request was Paul Mueller Company, M-U-E-L.
So I spent about a half an hour looking at this company. It's cheap and profitable. It's very intriguing. It's a very tiny market cap, only like 35 or 40 million. So you have to be very, very careful. It's a, you know, it's a micro cap. One thing that's interesting, though, is that it looks like they used up most of their free cash flow for capital expenditures. So their free cash flow yield, even though it looks cheap on an earnings basis, up until like last year on a free cash flow yield basis, it looked very expensive. Now it looks like maybe they're not consuming as much capital. So I don't have a buy or sell on this. I would say this is a very interesting situation. And if you can get a handle around whether their CapEx will be fairly low in the future, then it could very well be a very intriguing opportunity.
Yes, but for now, it is a hold. Watch it. See what's happening on Paul Mueller Company, M-U-E-L.
No money changes hands today.
Next, for Morris in Bradenton, Florida, it's Boardwalk Pipeline Partners, BWP.
I personally own Boardwalk Pipeline. It is a compelling, high-quality asset. It's majority owned by the Lowe's Corporation, which is in turn big insider ownership by the Tishes. It has a lot of really good things going for it. Now, 6 or 8 weeks ago, it was a $10, $11 stock. It's now $15, $16. I would not buy it at this level, but if it pull back, I think anything under $15 is a good entry level. And the dividend right now, which is tax-favored, it's not really a dividend. It's a distribution from their pipeline. What they do is they own a pipeline system which sort of comports to the Mississippi, flows along the Mississippi up into the Ohio Basin and fans out into Texas and on the east into the panhandle of Florida. And I think that right now they're paying about they're paying 40 cents a share dividend. From all the estimates I see, I think within a couple of years, that could be hiked up to about $1.40, maybe $1.60. So I think this is a really good long-term intriguing income idea. It cannot be bought in IRAs. You know, it's a K-1
right.
issue, which some people don't like, but it's a buy.
I was going to say, well, it sounds like it's actually a hold to a buy. You're waiting for that slightly better price, is I think what you said a moment ago, right?
It's yeah, that's that right.
So, so we'll describe it this way.
Hold fire!
You're holding Boardwalk Pipeline Partners, looking for that slightly better entry point because the stock has run up in recent weeks. Let's see if we can squeeze these last two in. The first for John in Seattle, it's DepoMed, D-E-P-O.
That's a sell. This is an example of a company which more often than not, year in and year out, has negative cash flow. You know, they fund their business. The last couple of years, they've taken on a lot of debt, and they've issued something like 30% more shares outstanding than they had 10 years ago. And as far as I can tell, you know, this is a speculative vehicle, so I would not own this.
Just let it go, dude. Count your losses and move on.
That's a sell on DepoMed. And last, for James in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania Real Estate Investment Trust, PEI.
This is a poster child for the real estate investment industry being in a bubble. This is a company where the dividend yield is less than 4%. I would say I would own this if the dividend yield increased to 7%, which means the stock would have to fall from something like 24 down to 14. So I would sell it. I would not own most real estate investment trusts because they simply are they're incredibly overvalued and are in a bubble.
There you go.
So low.
So I wish we had more time to discuss the bubble in REITs that you see, but that was a sell on Pennsylvania Real Estate Investment Trust, PEI.
Don't get greedy.
And unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time with Martin LeClaire from Barrick Yard Advisors. Marty, it is always great to chat with you. Thanks so much for taking time out.
Oh, I loved it. Thank you.
Remember, if you want to get more information on Martin LeClaire or his firm, at Barrick Yard on Twitter, barrickyard.com online. We'll be right back to wrap up today's show.
PowerShares provides a different take on traditional asset categories while providing advisors and investors with innovative investment opportunities. For more information, go to PowerShares.com. Invesco Distributors, Incorporated.
Wow, so much to revisit. First things first, here's a little trivia for you. You know, when Martin LeClaire was talking about the company Group Brussels, etc., and he talked about how it was partly owned by the Frère family, when my grandfather left Germany, he moved to Belgium. And the business that he was a partner in was Jaffrey Frère. And yes, to the best of my knowledge, that Frère family, which is how he had the wherewithal to escape the country and to ultimately pay to bribe the family's way out of an internment camp, the rest of the family's way out of an internment camp. But that's a separate story under any circumstances. Now, if you listen to today's show, you know, we talk about disagreement making a market. But I got to tell you, definitely there today. Seriously.
I don't know what you're trying to prove, but you're proving it. You're proving it.
Yeah, we are proving it. So here's what you had happen today. You had David Payne from Kiplinger's come on and say that he expects better growth going forward, especially after the second quarter. He thinks growth is going to be up, and he thinks the consumer is coming back into the market and that it's going to drive things to get us 3% or better growth through the end of the year. Whether or not it continues, there's other things, but that's what he said. Then you had Matthias Kuhlme and Matt Harris come in, and they're talking about inflation. And they say, no, no, no. The inflation number isn't the CPI. It's something closer to 9%. And this is why consumers, A, aren't spending, and B, why they're not going to be spending. Right? And then you have Marty LeClaire come in, and he's talking when he talks about the big picture, and he says, well, you know, we're looking for disruptive technologies, but right now you're finding things where the consumers are not spending because there's no growth here. He said there's no growth, so you're not getting the conditions that are great for certain types of companies, and consumers are not spending. Okay, so the last two guests disagreed with the second guest, right? And then, by the way, one of the ways that if you wanted to follow Matthias and Matt and say, I need to generate better yields. Well, one of the things you might do is you might invest in the ETF, the DivCon ETF, that was the ETF of the week, because you're looking to generate. I mean, wild. This is why we love doing this show. And it doesn't have to be just like stocks and everything else. You got a diversity of opinions here today that definitely proved, you know, what we wind up saying every day, the disagreement makes a market, and you have to find your place in it. Tomorrow on this show, Stephen Dodson from the Breton Fund, he will be our big interview. We will have Greg McBride from Bankrate.com. We will have Doug Ramsey on in our big interview from the Luthold Funds, and we will have Lawrence McMillan from the Options Strategist. It's going to be a great day. We'll be here on Monday with another great show, including Catherine Collinson from Transamerica. We were supposed to have Ryan Wibberly. He has canceled on us. He's from CIC Wealth Management. We'll see. If you cancel your maiden voyage, maybe you don't get to make a second. Who knows? But we'll have a great show Monday. We'll take Tuesday off. You can all watch the lacrosse game that I'll be broadcasting if you want to do it that way. And we'll have some fun there. So great things planned and other great guests coming. Trust me, you are going to love this show next week, the 4 days that we're here. I want to thank my guests from today. Of course, Tom Lydon, Matthias Kuhlme, and Matt Harris, Matthias and Tom being regulars. David Payne from Kiplinger and Marty LeClaire from Barrack Yard Advisors. I want to thank Rob Floyd, my producer, especially given what he was dealing with yesterday, and I want to thank you for being here. All right, today's Money Life quote of the day comes from Henny Youngman, who said, I've got all the money I'll ever need if I die by 4 o'clock. Well, we hope that won't happen to you. We hope you will have plenty of money all that you need, and we hope you'll remember that until we do this again the next time, the best thing you can do for all that money is to not worry too much about it. Have a great day, everybody. See you tomorrow.
The opinions expressed on Money Life are those of the host and guests only and reflect their personal thinking. They are not to be taken as representative policy or strategy of the organization that the host or guest represents. This show is a production of Money Life Radio, Inc., which retains all rights to its content. This broadcast, either in part or in its entirety, may not be retransmitted, reproduced, or rebroadcast without the express consent of Money Life Radio, Inc. This show is an informational service only. The information here is not to be considered a direct and personal recommendation for any individual to make a specific financial decision or transaction, but rather is meant as an informal resource to help investors make informed decisions. Always consult your financial advisor, accountant, or attorney before making any major financial decision. The information provided has been obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable, but is not guaranteed for either its accuracy or completeness.
Okay, time's up. Now get out.